What's going on, guys? Welcome to the show. We're back. We're here talking Will Smith. We're here talking a Tony Scott gem. It's Enemy of the State. We're here. We got Miss Movies in the studio. We'll see you guys in just a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom!
Oh, Drake produced this, right?
Did he really?
No.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. We're here. We're getting jiggy with it. That's it. Now, honey, honey, come ride.
Is that DK what he's...
And what?
Don't say that. Don't say that to me.
I know all the words. It's not a big deal.
He does. He truly does.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Action Movie Anatomy. We're here on a Wednesday. We're talking Enemy of the State. I'm excited. We're back. I think this is our last show of 2017. I think this is the final show.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, our good friend, Brian Chandler here, has been... hounding us to do this for I don't want to like
asking is polite.
Yes. Asking us very politely to do this for over a year, and Ben and I just like I don't know what was wrong with us, but this is perfect time. It's Christmas movie.
It's Christmas movie.
Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Christmas
absolutely.
Action film. Yeah. There's only a few of those, and always Die Hard takes the cake for the Christmas action
right.
film.
Yep. Right.
Lethal Weapon might be second.
I like this more than both of those, personally.
I prefer Die Hard, but I'm not a big Lethal Weapon guy.
Yeah. We got Miss Movies in the house.
Yeah,
here,
what's
everybody?
Up, everybody? Welcome. Welcome to the show, Miss Movies.
Thanks for having me again. It's weird not having my other appendage here, Howard. That's kind of strange, but...
Well, she stole your thunder, because she insisted she came on for The Mummy.
Right.
And so she came on first for that one.
Yeah.
So it's long overdue that we've had you on.
Yeah,
I know.
Without her to show her up. So this is your chance.
This is my chance, guys. Yeah. to show you.
And to all the Schmodown fans out there, this has got to be a pleasure. This is a delight. Because we've been friends for years now. And this is before I ever did the Schmodown and Ben as well. Yeah. And it was before you did it, I believe, too. Or you maybe just starting?
When I came on this show, we had already done the Schmodown. I think when you guys came on our
degrees.
Show, 6 Degrees,
we hadn't done
it yet.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
So now,
what a year it's been.
Yeah, what a year it's been. Exactly. We've all got these personalities. You're a heel, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're so evil. Look at us.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We're all in good company. That's
exactly.
what it is.
Exactly. So we're here to talk movies, guys. It's Action Movie Anatomy. We talk action movies on the show. Those action movies adhere to four basic rules. Number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. This is one of those duo hero movies where, like, because Will Smith doesn't really play by his own rules. He kind of does as the movie goes on, but it's really Brill that plays by his own rules.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like a combined hero. The two of them combined make the perfect hero.
Except that, like, actually, it's just Gene Hackman. Like, you don't actually need anything that Will Smith brings to the table in this movie as a hero. Gene Hackman does all of it.
Well, kind of. I mean, the very end is like a really sweet twist
turn,
or kind of, even though a lot of people are like, how the hell did John Voight not? But John Voight, moving on to our second rule, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or villains, creatures, animals, whatever beings in the room. Is John Voight actually the smartest person, or is he just kind of
well,
like...
Well, he's got a team. So
he's got a team.
Because of that, I feel like maybe he is the smartest person because he was able to gather all these people together and under a guise of something else... Like, get them to do this for
he's
him.
Able to
the NSA.
He's able to be like, beep, boop, boop, take care of it. And it always gets done.
They're like there within a minute or two, which is so funny because now it's almost 20 years later. And we're like, we still can't do that. We can't pinpoint you instantly and be there in a minute.
It's like literally, I feel like the drop should be like, beep, boop, boop, make the call. And that should be like in every 90s thriller of all time because that's like always how it works.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because we didn't know.
We
didn't know the way it works.
At the same time, they're really only working within a small radius in
that's
general
true.
That's
but
true.
But I don't know, getting there is that quickly and getting it all correct. And what if that technology like fails on them? They're like, oh, you know what, we pinpointed here, but really it's 10 miles south of
it doesn't fail on the NSA.
Never, not when Jack Black's running the show. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure.
Congressman.
Actually, now that I think about it, Will Smith's just a lawyer, and it's driven by him.
So it doesn't fit the rule entirely there.
But Brill, he's ex-NSA.
Yeah.
You know, disappeared in 65. It disappeared in 80. That's a long time. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely. Yeah. There's some explosions. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer movie.
Why'd you blow up the building? Because you made a phone call.
Yeah. I saw this movie in theaters with my dad, by the way.
Did you really?
I did. Yeah.
Another one of the inappropriate films you saw with your father when you were 10 years old.
Yep. That's exactly right.
I was going to say, definitely around 10 for
you. Yeah, that's exactly when it was. And yeah, my dad loved Hackman, so we went to see this. I thought it was really cool. I didn't remember it very well, honestly. Yeah, and I watched it recently, wasted, and I still didn't remember it very well.
Why are you watching it wasted, number one? But number two, I did not see this in the theater, although I was of age that I could legally go in by myself.
Right.
But I ended up watching it, renting it from Blockbuster because I worked there at the time, and you used to get five. Yes, the best people work there. Yep. I mean, Quentin Tarantino. So five movies at a time you could check out as an employee, and this was one of them. I think I had it for a few weeks because I was like, I got to keep watching this over and over.
A lot of movie watching happened working at Blockbuster. Right. Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah,
before Netflix.
So really quickly, let's just do our quick plugs here. I'm Andrew Guy. You guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. You can find our Facebook fan page, the Action Movie Anatomy fan page on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, at AMA Podcast.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, Twitter, Instagram, and Miss Movies. Where can the folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Miss Movies, and on Instagram, Miss _ Movies. Mm. I couldn't get it across all social medias, guys. I'm sorry.
It's a shame.
It's unfortunate.
And also check out 6 Degrees of Film. And,
yes,
and,
6 Degrees of Feature Film, specifically on YouTube.com/MissMovies.
And Film Therapy. We've both been on both of those.
Yeah.
And
yes.
They're phenomenal.
And we need to have you back on 6 Degrees, because it's been a while. And now we do video. Before then, it was just audio.
Believe it or not, when Andrew and I went on, we actually we talked about Tom Cruise movies. So.
Which is funny, because we're going to talk about Tom Cruise today as well.
Oh, man.
All right, so what do we got lined up today, Ben?
So coming up on the show today, we're going to be doing Over Siege, Under Siege, Properly Siege, Will Smith. We're going to be doing top five Will Smith movies, and we are going to be talking about the consummate cliches of 90s thrillers. Let's get straight into the show. I say we cue up the trailer and get into Thesis Statement.
Subject entering lingerie store.
I don't know if that word's appropriate.
Sounds sexual.
Hi. So you want some lingerie for your wife?
This
scene is so nice.
Just
like inappropriate
really
flirting. It doesn't make any sense. But
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm experienced. You know, I don't want to come in here and look stupid. Too late.
Yeah.
Should have gotten our watch.
Robert Clayton Dean was innocent.
Freeze that times 10. We have reason to believe that Mr. Zavitz may have passed sensitive materials to you.
What kind of materials?
Sensitive, sir.
Let's get into his life. He only does it in certain moments. And the rest of it, he's like,
he was unsuspecting.
Straight. He's great.
Yeah.
Hello?
Those are the movies in this movie that I hate the most, though. When he goes back to
it.
You are the only woman in the world for me. You and Janet Jackson.
I love there's so many references.
What
that's
he
one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Janet Jackson. Yeah, like they reference the cars.
Kill him.
Yeah, she was like,
Remember that cover?
Dude, I walked by that in Blockbuster Video, and I was like, went straight to the back.
I only remember Velvet Rope, guys.
Target's on the move.
A name, a phone number.
No, nothing. He didn't give me anything.
That Gabriel Byrne part doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't. He's like top billed, and I'm like, what? Why?
And he's like a horrible assassin.
To get what we need.
From Jerry Bruckheimer.
Get the cat.
What's the cat's name?
Babe.
Producer
enormous
of the
cast. Oh, insane.
Huge cast. Baby, come here.
All before they like really hit, too.
Yeah.
Most 21.
Director of Crimson Tide.
Just about me. 20. They know me.
19.
But it's different voice.
Who's that?
18.
He jumped to 17.
Do they know me? I don't know what you're talking about.
Will Smith.
You're one of them, aren't you? Former conspirer.
Gene Hackman.
My thesis has got to be this movie should have been done by the Snake Eyes trailer.
It's not paranoia when they're really after you.
Tunnels. Tunnels is another, another 90s cliche.
For sure.
Enemy of the state.
What the hell is happening?
I blew up the building.
Why?
Because you made a phone call.
It's like... So
it's just like perfect. It's the perfect timing
for
when this movie came out.
There's so much to talk about. I'm actually really excited for this one today. I say we get straight into our thesis statements. And
you're normally not excited.
Yeah. My thesis today will lead into the thought that I was about to just ramble on for a second about. So this is my thesis is this. And for those of you listening or watching for the first time, thesis statement is your biggest, boldest thought. It's the thing that you would defend at a party if the movie came up that you would really stand on your soapbox about. It's your biggest idea about the
movie. Yeah, if you could say one thing about this film and only one thing, this would be it.
And it should never be loose. This is my favorite movie Will Smith's ever been in. It should be strong. The only this, the greatest this, the first this. So this is the smartest Jerry Bruckheimer movie ever made. So I'll qualify it.
All right.
Jerry Bruckheimer's been making movies since the mid-70s. He's made tons of franchises, the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, all kinds of hits in the 90s, all The Rock, and Con Air, right? Even movies like...
Whoa, all right. This is already thrown out the window then, man.
You go back to like early 80s, you do like Thief with James Caan, you know, Top Gun, tons and tons and tons of action movies. What you realize, though, is that for the most part, the movies lack substance. Most of them are big adventure flicks with a lot of explosions. Mm-hmm. Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson, Michael Bay was a big part of it. Tony Scott directed a bunch of them. But this movie's very smart. It's just wrapped in the shell of one of these movies.
Right.
Like, the technology that they're using here, all the idea of surveillance, this act. I mean, the Patriot Act was passed, like, 3 years later.
Yeah.
Like, this is an actual relevant idea. Yes. This movie references things that happened in the real world. All the security concerns, they're real. When you read the Wikipedia about this, it references Edward Snowden. Like, this is a real idea.
Yeah, watching this, you were kind of like, holy shit, look at all this stuff
they
that kinda just, like,
had
happened.
It. They kind of had it figured out. And so, as much as this movie's ridiculous, it's one of the only Jerry Bruckheimer movies that I can think of that even tackles a subject that matters or is real in a way that isn't that outrageous. Like, there's nothing that crazy in this movie aside from how swiftly the technology works, except for the fact that nowadays the technology does work that swiftly. Almost.
Yeah. I mean, so, you can ping your phone and make it make a sound or lock it from your computer in an instant. So
absolutely.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. Would you consider this, instead of the smartest, the most real?
I just think I can't say that it's
true
real
to life.
For 98, because it wasn't. And a lot of the technology and the way that they show it, even today, would just be different. But I think it's the smartest in the sense that I think it's poking fun at the government a little bit. It's trying to address a real concern, which is probably one of the reasons Tony Scott was interested in directing the movie, because he always wants to make movies that are a little bit more interesting. Like, he doesn't really usually want to make a movie that's just a straight, like... He wouldn't probably direct The Rock, for instance. Like, there's nothing that interesting about
That's his own damn problem.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. I mean, I can't argue the point, because I don't know his...
Armageddon's not smart. Yeah. I mean, Bad Boys.
In layman's
terms. Beverly Hills Cop.
And also, I don't know. I guess I don't know enough. And it's tough because, Pirates of the Caribbean wasn't, that smart. It was just so well made.
Yeah, so I guess when I say smart, it just feels like this movie is addressing something that's a real concern in the world, and it's doing it in a pretty intelligent way. Like,
More mathematically smart.
Yeah. It feels like the idea of the screenplay is something that, if this movie had been made by someone else with a few less explosions and a different cast... This movie could be like Michael Clayton level. Like, it could have been that kind of movie. It's not that outrageous. Marissa Serafini is up in the booth, by the way. How you doing, Marissa?
She left us. We're on our own.
Great, guys. How are you?
I'm doing very well, except it's a little warm. Do you think we could maybe flip on the AC?
Sure, is that possible? Just for you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's me that asked, not
Andrew. I'm fine today. All right, Brianne, what is your thesis statement?
My thesis statement is, this is the best Will Smith standalone action movie, meaning it's not part of a franchise or it's not a sequel.
So saying that you think that Bad Boys is better, Men in Black is better, or what do you...
No, I'm saying it's the best standalone.
Right.
Action.
Right.
But the ones that are franchised.
So out of the ones that are franchised.
Yeah.
We'll get to that when we rank our Will Smith movies later.
Okay. Sure. We could get to that. But
putting it up next to, say, like, I, Robot or I Am Legend or some of the other big ones.
Legend
like
of Bagger Vance.
Mm-hmm. Wild West. I mean, I'm saying this is the best out of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because my thesis is basically the same thing. I was originally going to go that this is the most stacked cast ever of a 90s thriller just because of the amount of names in this movie before they became, like, massive stars or even just, like, hit their peak as stars.
Yeah.
Like, but I decided to go with that. This is Will Smith's best action movie, like, straight up. I think this is Will Smith's most underrated 90s film, action wise. And I think that, like, of all the other ones, which is Bad Boys, Men in Black, I, Robot, I Am
Independence
Legend,
Day.
All those, Independence Day, like, I like this movie the most. It holds up the most for me. And I think it's because you guys hear me gripe about Will Smith a lot on this show. And it's because I just don't like the way that he was pigeonholed in the 90s. It wasn't his fault. He did exactly what he was supposed to do with his career, and look at him now. He's one of the biggest stars ever.
Yeah.
And the movies in the 90s, he was making $20 million a film, and they were all grossing over $100 million. So you can't fault the guy.
Right.
I would make the same decision.
I would do the exact same thing 100%. But unfortunately for me, I just don't enjoy what he did in the 90s as much anymore.
Totally. I agree with you. And his thing in the 90s was like, it's that way that he was cast. I mean, the easiest way to put it in perspective is to say he had had three singles off of Big Willie Style on the radio in the 12 months prior to this movie coming out.
Right.
That's the guy that was supposed to play the lead role in like an intense surveillance-based CIA thriller. Like, you just can't. Like, that's the it doesn't add up.
Right, but then he does it. He does a pretty good job of it. Yeah. And so I just think that this is his most underrated film of the 90s and maybe action movie ever. And I know that answers a couple AMA questions we had out there. I know Josh Ryan asked it. I think Jacob Leith might have asked it as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. We'll get into ranking the movies, and we'll see what you guys think about his other action movies, I guess.
Yeah, I was saying this over the trailer, but it's like you can tell very distinctly the way that he was pushed in Bad Boys and Men in Black and Independence Day to do that. Like, oh, hell no! That stuff that he did a lot of. He does so much less of it in this movie, but it's early enough in his career, you can almost think about this movie as the end of phase one. Like, this is something that looks really interesting about Will Smith, is that he took 4 years off between 2008 and 2012. Most people don't remember, because in a lot of people's minds, they'll remember Pursuit of Happiness, I Am Legend, Hancock.
Right.
And then in their mind, they stopped watching Will Smith movies, which is how I feel.
What about Hitch?
That's
Where does
before.
That come in?
That's 05.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So in my mind, I was like, yeah, I think I just stopped watching his movies around then, which makes sense because he didn't make a movie for 4 years. His next movie was Men in Black 3, which I had no interest in watching at that point.
Sure.
Then he made After Earth the same summer as Oblivion and World War Z.
I still haven't seen After Earth. Have you seen After Earth?
It's a weird sci-fi movie.
I'm sorry.
Directed
what?
By M. Night Shyamalan.
Everyone. M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah.
Yes.
He directed took this movie. Picture? The director of The Village, M. Night Shyamalan.
But the point is, basically... What?
Why did he have this break? Do we know?
I don't know. It could have been something to do with raising his kids. But the point is, like, when you think about his career, the reason in most people's minds that Will Smith is, like, kind of a different type of star than he was is because he took almost half a decade off from movies.
And do you think it's because he realized he was getting oversaturated and people were getting sick of him? Or do you think he was just like, I'm going to start a family? Or, like, what do you think it was?
Yeah, maybe he's just like, you know what? I want to take some time off for myself, like, and enjoy this.
Probably. Yeah, probably more
than
that.
I mean, that's my mindset. I'd be like, you know what? I got some money. Maybe I'm going to take some vacations.
He's never really entirely... He's never really entirely recovered from it, I would say.
No, and he's like, I think Concussion was kind of like the feeler to be like, can I do this again? Can I do like an Oscar bait movie where I'm just playing a character? I'm not playing Will Smith at all, and I'm not like in a franchise like superhero movie. It's just like I'm just doing this. And I never saw it. I heard it wasn't bad. I heard he did okay. Yeah,
people had mixed opinions about it. Will Smith's still a huge star, and we're going to get into Over Siege, Under Siege, Probably Siege a little later, so we'll talk about that. But if we're wrapped on Thesis, I say we get into the next part of the show.
Yes, absolutely.
Fist bump moment. It's that part of the movie. Something happens. You look around. You're just like, are you seeing this right now? This is so awesome. It makes you feel like a certain way. You got to call your buddy. You got to tell him about it. For me, this one had a lot to do with seeing it as a little kid, and because I always, for some reason, have remembered the shot of him on the phone when he sees Gene Hackman, and Gene Hackman mouths, fuck you.
Yes, of course.
That's and you're like, I know what he's saying.
Yeah. I was 10, and I was like, why is he saying fuck you?
Like, man, you shouldn't even be saying that.
They haven't even talked. I was like, why is he saying that to him? And it's not even saying, like, I know, or like something that would like communicate anything. He's just telling
him. He's just awesome. He's just brill, man.
Yeah, but it's like Gene Hackman. He's like an angry old man. And like, I just always remember it. So when I saw it in this movie again, I was like, yeah, sweet. This movie's about to get real because Gene Hackman's in it.
That's so funny because that was my fist pump moment too, but it had nothing to do with being a kid and watching it. Because it's like, he's so 90s. Like in that, it's like even the haircut, the jacket, the like yellow tinted sunglasses or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's just
so true.
I don't know how he looks badass. But he looks totally badass.
A lot of people don't realize...
He looks like that dad you'd never want to piss off, ever.
Yeah. You think about it when you see him in this movie, and you think to yourself, like, Gene Hackman was still, like... He was still a big name.
Oh, he was killing it.
Because Tenenbaum's a couple years later, but this is close to the end of his career. He retired 6 years after this movie was made.
Mm-hmm.
Tenenbaum's was, I think, 2001.
That sounds right.
Yes. Let's not forget Heartbreakers, which is one of my favorite
films. Yeah. He only made, like, a few movies. And then
good movie.
Welcome to Mooseport in 2004 was
that was it.
He hasn't made a movie in 13 years. He's almost 90.
Yeah, I mean, he is, like, officially retired, it seems. And it's a bummer because He's so good.
Yeah, Hackman was...
He really, but, like, in Tenenbaums and in Heartbreakers, you see it. He's, like, he's getting old. He's getting a little old.
Yeah, he was playing those roles.
I kind of appreciate, though, that he is able to say, you know, it's time for me to step away from this, rather than people that just try to keep going just to keep going.
Yeah, who was it we were watching the other day, or we talked about it on the show, where it was, like, watching them on film was almost, like, it was, like, rough. They
Harrison
were, like, too
Ford.
Old. Yeah, Harrison Ford is... it wasn't Newman, but it was, like, something like Newman. Newman is, like, very close.
Right.
Anyway, so what is your fist pump, Brianne? It's different than ours, I'm assuming.
I'm shocked that I thought we're all going to have the same one, and it's going to be the standoff at the end of the film.
It's so good. You mean the shower room scene from The Rock and something in the kitchen in Little Italy?
It's so good.
Oh, my gosh. I was just like, ugh.
Yeah. You know,
when and you kind of see it coming, but you're not really, and you're like, "What?" When the first time you see it, you're like, "What is he doing here?
Right.
Like, how is this going to play out?" Like,
why
and
are you
then
bringing
you
all your problems
all
together?
And when I rewatched this the other day, I was like, I completely forgot about the very beginning of the movie when they set this up.
Totally.
And so I was just like, in my mind, when I start this movie, when I'm thinking back about it, I start with. The guy seeing first of all, the congressman dying, and then the guy seeing the tape of it. Like, that's where I start. I don't start
Jason
with all
Lee.
The lawyer stuff, and I'm just like, oh, yes, that's right. God, Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, Sizemore. This cast, and I think the reason this cast was so crazy is because of the string of hits that Bruckheimer and Simpson had in the 90s.
Right.
That trio of well, I guess that's the Cage trio, but the back-to-back of Con Air and The Rock, and just all the movies they made, Crimson Tide, everything they made would have huge A-list Oscar-winning actors in major roles making tons and tons of money, and they never had to be tied to a franchise. They weren't like, we're making Transformers or we're going to make Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
We're just going to do this movie.
It was like, this is a submarine movie. We get Gene Hackman. We get Denzel. It's going to make a ton of money. And it did.
Yep.
You know, we're going to get Ed Harris and Nick Cage. It's going to make a ton of money. And it did. Like, so I think in this movie, it's just like, they're making Enemy of the State. Hackman's going to be in it. Will Smith just made these two massive hits.
Yeah.
So it's just like, we're going to get Jack Black and Tom Sizemore and Jamie Kennedy and Seth Green and Jake Busey and Barry Pepper and Jason Lee.
It just goes
Lee
on forever. And, it goes on forever. The list of people
It's a crazy podcast.
Oh, you know who I recognized in this movie, which I didn't before, because I just recently finished Breaking Bad, but Anna Gunn is in it. And I was like, hey!
Skyler.
That's Skyler. Yeah. What do you know? And at the time, this is interesting too, when I watched it however many years ago and loved it, back in Blockbuster days, I thought that her character was John Voight's assistant or John Voight's daughter, or I had no idea it's his wife, guys.
Does not look affectionate at all. No affection, and like, they do not have good
significantly
chemistry.
Younger.
Yeah. And I was like, she has the same last name as his character. Oh,
daughter.
Okay.
Daughter, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely daughter.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
It really does not.
That was very close to a fist bump for me, too, because I'd forgotten how the movie ended. And I was like, as soon as they pull up there, I was like, oh my God. And then I remembered, like, because the shootout's gnarly.
Yeah.
It's like a really intense 90s action shootout.
I just
like,
keep waiting for Michael Biehn with the sidearm on the ground.
Amazing.
Sliding in.
So, so speaking of the 90s sidearm, what are some of the definitive cliches of 90s thrillers? We talk about this on the show all the time. We've done them from The Rock to Con Air to Predator, and Enemy of the State is filled with them.
Well, yeah, I think it's distinctly, like, the thing that made me think about this segment was that when I was looking on Amazon to watch the movie, at the bottom, it's like, these are the six movies you should check out if you like this movie.
Yes, I love that.
And the six movies that I saw, I wish I had written them all down, but they were all just like, oh, yeah, that movie's sweet, that movie's ridiculous. You know, it's like Snake Eyes, movies like that.
Yeah.
They're all like, you know, The Pelican Brief, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're all like thrillers. They're not like straight action movies.
Yeah.
But like, some of the ones that I was thinking was like super, super, super advanced technology that looks like really primitive, because of course it looks primitive. It's like a square white, like old Apple computer with like green lines. We have his position.
We found him. One of my favorite ones is the Voight picks up the phone. He's like, is this line secure?
Yeah. And it's like, is this line secure? That's the best.
Best thing to say, right?
Yeah.
The amount of silencers, right? There's so many silencers on guns throughout this movie, but every time they go off, it's a normal gunshot sound.
Yeah.
They never use the silencers.
Like,
they're just there for effect.
Yeah. Action movies are, we've talked a lot about, it's red dot lasers and C4.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But silencers seem to be the crossover. They're very universal. You get a lot of them in both, in the thrillers and the action movies.
I think what else we got. Brian, you have any?
I said I like mainly when the hero needs like a social outcast buddy.
Right,
or
right,
friend
right.
Or something.
His
definitely someone.
Friend.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I know this guy, David David Zavids or whatever his name is.
Go to Columbia
together. What? He's the duck guy? Like, why do you know him?
Of course, because it's it like makes your like super like dashing hero kind of relatable to like be sympathetic and friendly with like just kind of a dweeb or something like
and
that.
And Brill's kind of that way too. Yeah, right. For this movie specifically,
for sure.
I also in the trailer realized tunnels were used a lot in the 90s.
Yeah,
tunnels
are
scary.
Yeah, tunnels
one way in and one way out.
I was like specifically Will Smith in tunnels. We got this movie. We have Independence Day.
You got Daybreak.
There's more.
You got Volcano.
It's called Daylight.
Daylight.
Whatever.
You chase a guy into a tunnel. He's only got one way out.
The other end.
Like that's brilliant. Put another tunnel in the movie. Another one that I love is Quirky Tech Guys.
This is like just the cast name. You can just say Jack Black, Jamie Kennedy, and Seth Green, and you're like,
you like Seth Green's hair and his like yellow glasses. Jack Black make the comments about like the maid, she doesn't shave her legs.
Then they have the blender and they're using it. Like,
do you want to blend? They were like, let's take some funny scenes from the movie She's All That and put them in here. I think that'll work well.
They also took the opening scene from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and just did that with Will Smith in the lingerie shop. I don't know if you guys remember that well, but it's like the same like awkward exchange. Where he's like kind of hitting on her, kind of not, then insults her. And
I was
it's like,
that's
like,
not the opening scene of National Lampoon's, but that's mid movie.
Yeah, no, it's like after they buy the Christmas tree. It's after they buy the Christmas tree. It's the next scene.
Another of my favorites is.
But I know what you're saying, and yes,
at least one like very socially inappropriate line in the script that was totally acceptable back then. So like when we did Goldeneye, we had the line where she says to him like, where she's like, that would be sexual harassment, and he's like, what's the punishment for that?
Yeah.
And he's like trying to be like dashing, and you're just like, you'd lose your job probably, and like
be all over Twitter. James Bond anymore, yeah.
Or like, and so this one, he's like, the guy's like, were you buying that lingerie for your wife? And he's like, no, I do some cross dressing on the weekends.
Yeah.
It's like, that's funny because of course I wouldn't. It's like, or maybe you just would because
people just do that.
Yeah, it was one of those ones. It's like that line wasn't like. It wasn't gross like some of the ones that come off a lot, but it was one of the ones where like that just wouldn't be written now because it's just not that relevant or funny.
I do want to know, is there a lingerie shop where the salespeople wear lingerie?
I know.
Like, I really want to know.
There probably
is that
is.
True?
There's got to be.
There must be. Yeah.
I should have researched this, but
you
I
should
didn't.
Open a business.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That scene was the most of the old style Will Smith in the movie.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so talking about Will Smith, let's get into exactly what he did. You said that he'd done three of his biggest movies ever, which, I mean, he did. It was Bad Boys in 95, Independence Day in 96, Men in Black in 97, and then this in 98, which I honestly think it trumps Nick Cage's 95 to 98 run as well.
Yeah, but it doesn't trump Nick Cage's 90. So Nick Cage
I'm talking post Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah. The 96-01.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Will Smith's might be better, except that I do think, so he does this movie. I don't think he makes a movie in 99, or if he does, I can't remember it.
Was it Wild Wild West?
Wild Wild West, and there's Ali. And so, like, I think the second half is, like, so much weaker than the first half.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, if you're talking about starting a career off, like, that's one of the strongest ever.
Crazy, crazy. I mean, those three together, like, compared to The Rock, Face Off, Con Air, because then he's got 8mm, Snake Eyes, Bringing Out the Dead, then he caps it off with Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, which is funny, because Gone in 60 Seconds is actually good, but he goes on a run there that's horrible. So, this is the thing about Will Smith, is he's been around for basically my entire life as an actor.
Yep.
He really has, and whether it was on TV, and then he was a massive, artist, and then now he's a movie star, and he has been, and he's one of the most respected ones ever. So we have this segment on this show. It's called Over Siege, Under Siege, and Properly Siege, and we're going to do it on Will Smith. What do you guys think? Where does this guy lie? And I'll start.
Okay.
I think he's incredibly overrated. I've always thought Will Smith is overrated.
All right.
And I think that the only reason that I even hesitate to say that now is because I feel like he's kind of been put... I don't want to say put in his place because it sounds like wrong, but like as an actor, he's kind of been... I guess, subdued a little bit. Like, it seemed like he could do whatever he wanted for about 15 years. And no matter what he did, it was like, it's going to make $100 million. People are going to go and see it. They're going to love it. They're going to talk about it. It's going to be this massive Hollywood blockbuster. And Will Smith is amazing. Everyone loves him. He doesn't cuss in his music, and he makes family-friendly films.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just never bought on after I was, 12 years old. I walked away from these movies, and I was just like, I don't like you anymore. And then 10 years passed, and I felt the same way.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, Brian, do you want to jump in? Do you
have Well, I have been thinking about this because I was like, oh, is it properly sieged or is it under sieged? And I was thinking, I feel like Will Smith is very primed to have an EGOT. Like, mm-hmm. he could definitely have an Emmy, a Grammy, a Tony, and an Oscar.
Yeah.
And yeah. so I feel that he has what it takes to, I don't know, maybe take his career in a different direction.
Yeah.
And be back later. And, you know, maybe he's going to go for that Tony or whatever and be on Broadway for however long and then come back and have a different yeah. entire career.
I mean, how old is Will Smith? Do you have it pulled up? I'm guessing
48.
I would guess.
You gonna say?
Yeah. That's what I would guess.
I was going to say 46.
Mm. If you're right, I'm going to be so like pissed.
Because I feel like he started early. So and
watch, he's 52 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's been 22 years
born
since
in
Bad 68. Boys.
So he's,
I think
what,
he
he's
was
almost,
I think he was probably like 24 in Bad Boys would be my guess.
98, 2008. He's yeah. almost 50.
So he's almost 50. So he's 49.
So you guys were closer.
Yes.
You're both
we
fired.
Win the date the prize is right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I hear what you're saying. God, this is a really hard one to decide because the complaints about Will Smith's 90s have less to do with Will Smith and more to do with how he was cast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. in Hollywood. Yeah.
Those movies were very successful.
Right, the decisions that he made.
When I realized that he took the 4 years off, it really softened my opinion because it made me feel like he wasn't just making irrelevant movies. He took almost half of that last decade off. And if that's mm-hmm. the case, then really he's had about 6 years of movies that are like, so. Suicide Squad was really successful. He's one of the best parts of that movie.
Right.
I actually enjoy him in that movie. Like, he's not awful the last, you know, few years. He just hasn't made anything really great.
Well, he has to have, what he has to do is he has to have a massive movie. I mean, honestly, Concussion was the chance. It was the one that was, like, heavily, heavily promoted. There was all this stuff yeah. going on in the NFL. It was around Super Bowl time, and it was just like, this is the movie, and it didn't happen. So he needs to have like we always talk about this, like a P.T. Anderson or a Tarantino movie or something like that, mm-hmm. where like a great director brings on an older Will Smith and is like, let's try this again.
Well, he's definitely different. Still in the phase. He's still in, like, young Will Smith phase. So he's still playing, yeah. like, in Suicide Squad, he's supposed to be playing a character who's, like, you know, early to mid-30s still. Like, he's still kind of getting away with that. He hasn't transitioned. And mm-hmm. the transition is when you, like, would see the next phase for him. It's funny. I think I have to say properly sieged. I was going to say over sieged, but it's got to be proper because he is one of the biggest stars of all time. And I don't think that the sense of Will Smith right now in the world is that he's a guy that can open a franchise. I think it's close, mm-hmm. but I think he's, you know, definitely lower on the list. And so right. I think he has fallen off, and I don't think the world is...
And that's why you make those ensemble choices when you do, when you yeah. you go in with those hot yeah. actors, Margot Robbie, which he was in that other movie with her, Focus. Did you see that?
No.
I didn't. And I've actually heard Focus is pretty good. I was
it's
gonna
not
say,
bad. It's not bad.
I was going to say, okay. I was going to say, like, how do you define this question?
It's no
I
think, heartbreakers. It ain't bad.
Great.
I think one of the answers to the questions is probably, like, how many truly underrated movies does an actor have? And I think Enemy of the State's underrated. That's pretty clear.
Yep.
I think at this point, Ali is underrated. I think it's, like, pretty much considered to just be, like, this forgotten flop where, like, Will Smith did a pretty good job imitating Muhammad Ali. But
yeah.
the movie's better than people give it credit for. I've heard Focus is pretty good, so I wouldn't imagine that that's probably underrated. But that's maybe it. I don't know. Hancock's kind of underrated. That movie's pretty decent.
Nah. All right. Well, I mean, we're just kind of rambling now talking about that. So let's get into ranking his movies then. You want to do that, or you want to talk Hackman?
Let's talk Hackman. We'll rank a little later.
So Hackman here is kind of at the end of his run. I mean, it's just like, I mean, what, 6 years later, he stopped making movies. So it feels like he was kind of at the end of what he wanted to do. He did Absolute Power in 97, Twilight in 1998, not to be confused with the other one.
Yep.
Yes.
And then Ants in 1998 as well, which was kind of like an attempt at being Pixar.
I feel like that was a favor to someone. Like, probably, can you come do a voiceover?
Yeah,
this
right.
movie?
Like, Bug's Life came out and it was really successful. Can you please be in Ants?
Yeah. Well, no, they were at this. They came out at the same time. No,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Bug's Life's gonna be good. Can you be Ants? I love Hackman. I don't really know him that well. I didn't watch a lot of his old movies. I mean, you know what I mean. I know him personally, but like, I don't know his filmography that well. I didn't watch a lot of him. I mean, honestly, it was basically Enemy of the State and Heartbreakers is what I watched him a lot of.
Have either of you seen The Conversation?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
So this
is something you got to watch.
Yeah.
And especially after loving this movie.
Yeah.
Because you will watch The Conversation and you'll be like, this is the same character. This is that same character now in modern times.
They like so the deal with
it's
Hackman.
So good.
For anybody listening or who doesn't really know, originally Hackman's big burst onto the scene is 71. It's The French Connection. The movie wins Best Picture. Right. He wins Best Actor. That's like what he's known for. He won another Oscar in 92 for Unforgiven, Best Supporting Actor, and he's very good in that movie. And throughout the years, he was in a ton of big hits, everything from Crimson Tide. One of the forgotten gems is The Conversation, which is the movie that Coppola made between Godfather 1 and Godfather 2. Came out in 73.
So good.
It's like this espionage.
I've heard about this.
CIA
if you
thriller.
Have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for $0.
It's a really good movie. I watched it in high school.
If you use the coupon code MISSMOVIES,
participating locations.
But yeah, there's a lot of parallels between the two movies. Yes. People do say that it's supposedly the same character. It's never been confirmed, but it's totally similar. There's a lot of similarities between the two movies. It actually brings a lot more to this movie. But that's Hackman, and he was definitely in the twilight of his career, no pun intended. Actually, Twilight is not a movie I've seen, but I know that movie stars
Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
Is that
Paul name? Newman.
Yep.
It's one of Newman's last three movies that he made. So Hackman and Newman together at the very end.
Pretty sweet.
I actually think my favorite Gene Hackman movie still
is Tenenbaums?
Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah. Tenenbaums, so he's incredible in that.
He's just so good. It makes me sad that he didn't win an Oscar for that movie.
Yeah, I guess those are the three. Those are the three movies I watched a lot of Hackman, and it just made me adore him.
Yeah, he's so good in Tenenbaums. He's just, he's so charming. He's so charming.
And disgusting.
Yeah, and disgusting. And I love him in Crimson Tide. I love him in Crimson Tide.
All right, so let's talk about how this movie was made. It's super interesting because you told me about this, which I think is hilarious. Tom Cruise was originally signed on to do this, but he turned it down to do Eyes Wide Shut, which I do think this movie would have been better if it was Tom Cruise. I truly do.
I do, and I do. I 100% do.
Well,
but I don't want it. Look, I don't know if you know this or not. But what I do believe is that all things happen for a reason, because another thing that happened was that Will Smith turned down another role for this, which was
Snake Eyes.
It's like a crazy web of awesome.
This is what the Bermuda Triangle
Nick
is
Cage
like.
And Tom Cruise. Oh my gosh, guys.
If you think about...
Who knew this gold mine was going to just erupt right now?
This movie.
If you think about it, like, all right, so the opening shot from Snake Eyes, the one you see in the trailer, I'm Rick Santoro, Ricky, and I am the king. If that was Will Smith, he would have done just fine. The movie probably would have been a lot better. It wouldn't have been as crazy, but it would have been better. This movie would have been better with Tom Cruise, for sure, because I actually think that as good as this movie is,
he would.
I think Will Smith is actually the wrong casting choice to make this movie good.
Crash Test on the Weekends.
Yeah. That's an improvised Will Smith line. Tom Cruise. Who knows what he would have said. I think that...
I'm a woman.
Sure, you could do that.
I'm sorry, guys. I was just trying something out there. You don't have to use that. I think a couple things. The first one is that I think that Will Smith really struggles to play the everyman. It's not his forte. He's too much of a big.
He's a little too flashy.
Yeah, and I don't think that Tom Cruise is that much better of an everyman, to be honest. He's not great at being the everyman. Like, the other guy that was in contention for this movie was Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson would have...
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, he's a better everyman, though.
Even Denzel, as you said.
Well, if Denzel had been in this movie would be a classic. Because Tony Scott directs Denzel like a
kid.
But I think that that's really interesting, that's how it all ended up breaking down. But I also don't love how Tony Scott directs Tom Cruise. Like, I think Top Gun is... I'm not the biggest fan of that movie. Like, it's fine. It's not great.
It's bubblegum.
Tom Cruise is ridiculous.
That's a great way to put it.
And then I don't love Days of Thunder. He's not great in that movie either.
I feel like I need to watch that movie again to get like a real opinion on it. I just don't have one.
Try watching Days of Thunder.
Yeah, really?
You'll get 40 minutes in and you'll turn it on.
I feel like that's what happened last time I tried to turn it on.
Yeah.
Anything else about this movie, like production-wise, before we get into like?
That Sean Connery was supposed to be Brill.
Yeah.
So how would that have been? Like Cruise and Connery as Brill.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been a sweet movie, but I think this is better.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? The other one too is Hackman in the Birdcage. Someone online reminded me of that. I love the Birdcage much.
It's just good in general.
So we can talk about Tony Scott a little bit. We've talked about him a lot on this show. We love Tony. We love everything that he's done. We think that him and Denzel together is basically as good as it gets. He's brothers with Ridley Scott, as you know. He was kind of always like the second best, I think, out of the two Scotts looked at by like, the general public, just because of, you know, Aliens, Gladiator, Blade Runner, all those things.
Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which would be probably the second choice for Bruckheimer's smartest movie.
But, really? Yeah. See, I love
Black Hawk Down.
I need to watch it again, because I think I watched it and I loved it, and then I watched it again a couple years later, because I watched it in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it a couple years later, and I was like, heh, and I just need to go back and
it's
check
another
it out.
Ensemble piece where it's like everyone's
tons of
just
people.
About
is Hardy
to break.
In there, too?
Yeah. Huge. The reason I would say it's second is because that movie's taking itself really seriously. So
yeah, and it's like made it the right, perfectly right time.
And it's a war movie, whereas this movie's like not really taking itself that seriously. So anyway,
August 9th, 2012 is when Mr. Scott committed suicide by jumping off a bridge in San Pedro. He was scouting locations for Top Gun 2, which is now officially in production. So hopefully they will do great honor to Mr. Scott. RIP, buddy.
He's like, every time we do a Tony Scott movie, I like look around to see if I can find. So at this point, because I think we've now done all five of his Denzel movies, this movie, Top Gun, so at least seven Tony Scott movies on this show. Every time we do one, I go back to see if I can find something else that I haven't watched. An interview with him, another article I can read on him. Because what I've found after doing this show for 2.5 years is that he's one of my favorite directors of all time. And it's because he understood something about how to turn like these like soulless big budget action movies into like just something that felt a little bit more special. Like they, on the whole, his career is just, there are these movies that have these moments that you remember in a way that, like what I was thinking about today when I was watching this was the lighting that he uses is so similar to Michael Bay. They light scenes in a very, very similar way. Everything is kind of like, everything is beautiful and kind of glowing in a certain way. Mm-hmm. It never looks natural.
Or like kind of like a slightly blurry.
Yeah.
Like blurred.
Yeah. Know? Like Michael Bay, the way he'll like.
Soft light, if
yes,
you will.
Yes.
Michael Bay, the way he'll light scenes like in Armageddon, I can think of when you first, or like in The Island when you see Steve Buscemi.
He glowing
at he like blows people out. And Tony Scott's kind of similar. So he uses a lot of the same techniques. So when I watch their movies, I think these look very similar. But Tony, the reason that he was so great with Denzel is like, as long as his actors are willing to take the material deadly serious and totally commit to these ridiculous situations, but with all the seriousness, then his movies work, which is why Denzel was the perfect guy for him to work with. It's why in every Denzel movie, you get the best version of Tony Scott, because like, he wanted these ridiculous big budget action movies to feel like you were watching something kind of real. And I think that's why the last hour of Deja Vu is kind of ridiculous, but
ridiculously perfect. So next is Bruckheimer. We've talked a lot about him and Don Simpson. So that just kind of leaves us with David Marconi, the writer. You want to give us a rundown on that, Bateman?
Marconi's like just one of these guys who you'll see his name pop up over the years. Live Free or Die Hard is where he broke through. Enemy of the State, Collision, that movie from a couple years ago that had Nicholas Holt and Felicity Jones. The one,
oh, it's not I didn't see it, but I know
it's
what
like
you're
not
about.
Even a real movie. It's one of those movies that like came out, but it came out years after it was made, and the only reason it came out then was because Rogue One was coming out and Felicity Jones was killing it.
Right,
and like, so we got to do this. Yes. Time to take it off the shelf, put it in theaters.
It's like what happened with what the hell was that movie that Chris Pine was in? Carriers, that horrible, horror
never
movie.
Saw that.
They shelved it for 2 years. They released it after Star Trek.
Yep,
amazing.
Hollywood.
Yeah, so Marconi, that's kind of him. The most interesting thing about him is that he just wrote The Foreigner, the Jackie Chan movie. That's him. And then this movie, he's credited as the main writer, but early drafts of the script have Aaron Sorkin, Henry Bean, and Tony Gilroy on them. So there's
crazy.
Wild, right? There's a poster you can go find of this movie that has all the names. It's got written by those four guys on it. And then, you know, when the movie actually came out, it was just Marconi's name. So nobody really knows how much work those other three guys did on the script. But it doesn't surprise me that, like, somebody like Tony Gilroy was in there writing the script, because it feels very much...
Yeah, it does feel very much like that.
I mentioned Michael Clayton.
Yeah.
It's his style. The Bourne movies, like, that feels like kind of what the script is. And you probably could have taken the script in a much more serious direction, honestly, if you had just gone with a draft of it that was written by like Sorkin.
But it was like the perfect 90s script.
Yeah,
it was just the well balance of the ridiculous and the real.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's get into numbers. Buena Vista, one of my favorites. This was made by Buena Vista. I miss seeing that. It cost $90 million to make, which is pretty substantial in 98.
Yeah,
it was released in November of 98 on the 20th. It cost it made $111 million domestically, and an additional $139 million worldwide for a grand total of $250 million. But what I love, and this was like the fist pump of making the outline, was that it opened at $20 million at number two behind the Rugrats movie at $27 million at number one. They opened the same week, and Rugrats beat it out by $7 million.
People underestimate those kid films, especially ones that are based on television shows.
Yeah, and this—I mean, Rugrats was the biggest like kids TV show. It seemed like ever.
Has Brianne seen the Rugrats movie? Yes or no, Andrew?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I've seen it.
No, but I've seen the Recess special.
Oh, yeah, me neither.
I've never seen it.
I've seen both of them. I've seen the Recess special and the Rugrats.
The fact that Andrew's the only one of us that's seen it is fitting.
Also, I believe that the song that I danced to with my dad at my wedding was from the Rugrats movie.
Was it?
Yes, I'm not joking. It's like a father-daughter
Which
dance.
Which song?
I don't remember.
You Got
what
a Friend
called.
In Me, written by
Track 7 by Randy Newman. Wait, what was that, Marissa?
I know we're completely going off on a tangent, but my ringtone is Rugrats. I kid you not.
Yes! Yeah. Amazing. All right, so critically, this movie has a 7.3 on IMDb, which I'm happy with it. I think it's fair.
Yeah.
I like this movie.
Sounds good.
Rotten Tomatoes, all critics give it a 71. Top give it a 59, and audience give it a 78, which makes sense for our little formula we have. 59 seems pretty ridiculously low. It seems like very harsh.
It's just top critics like reacting to the fact that we were years into this genre now, and they were just like, this is a silly movie. Because the parts that are silly, if you're like, you know, some art house critic and you want to give it a bad review, you can. It's
oh,
not,
definitely.
It's
you,
not
can,
hard
you can pick
to
it apart
it
if you want. Yeah. All right, so let's rank these movies now. I'm so curious to see what your guys' top five Will Smith movies are, because my list, when you talked to me about like that we were going to do it, I was like, oh yeah, easy. And
easy.
I was like, wait. I mean, it is easy to put the five movies together, but it's like the list of them, the order of them. So, I need that. Brianne, do you want to go with your number five?
Sure.
Or do you have them ranked in order?
I put them 5-1,
okay,
so we're good.
Perfect.
So we're good. My number five is I Am Legend. Am I going through the whole thing, or are we going
through all five?
I Am Legend. Number four, Men in Black. Number three, The Pursuit of Happiness. Number two, Bad Boys. And number one, Enemy of the State.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm glad it's your, so your favorite
on
there.
One. It has to be. That's why I'm here.
Baby, what do you got? It's true things.
All right, I'm going to go... Oh, man, this is tough. I just realized that I hadn't put Independence Day on my... Nah, I don't love Independence Day. I think it's kind of bad. Number five, Hitch. Big fan. Big fan.
Love
Kevin
Hitch.
James dancing.
Yeah.
This movie is, like, really funny.
And she is just stunning in it.
I am not into this film. I'm just not into it. I think you guys are brainwashed by being on Spike, like, every week.
That's probably why. It's on Spike tonight, 10/9 Central.
I'm pretty sure I've told the story before, but, like, on the cover of the movie, it's, like, Will Smith, and he's leaning over the word Hitch. He's, like, leaning on it, smiling. And at my local video store that I would always go to, one of the guys had photoshopped the H into a B and put an A over it. So it said, Will Smith is a bitch. And it's him, like, smiling. And it was just, like, front and center in the video store for years.
I gotta see this.
And we always, I would
That's
laugh
like
about
so
that.
That's, like, so stupidly funny.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's, like, so dumb.
Yeah, it's like, I'm way too old to be laughing at that point. All right, what do you got?
No,
I call Hitch, like, the guy's rom-com.
It is.
Like,
yeah,
this
that's
is
what
a
I think
rom-com
it is.
Com
I think,
for
yeah.
men. Like, this is where you'd go to.
It's sweet. Kevin James is great. Super sweet. Number four, Men in Black, which, like, yeah, it's fine. Number three, Enemy of the State. Number two, The Pursuit of Happiness. And I'm going to surprise everybody here and say my number one Will Smith movie is Ali.
I don't remember it well enough to even have it on my list, unfortunately.
When I've gone back to watch it, I mentioned this earlier, like... It's a pretty good movie. It's what a lot of people forget about Ali is that, like, so Michael Mann made Heat in 95, Mohicans in 92, he made The Insider in 99, and then this was the next movie he made after The Insider. So it's part of his, like, legitimate run. The movie after that is Collateral. He made, like, five really, really solid movies, and this is right in the heart of it. So it is overly long, for sure. It's not that interesting, but, like, compared to most of the rest of these movies, like, it's made by one of the great directors of our time in the peak of his career when he was truly making great movies before he, like, kind of fell off a cliff. So,
yeah. I mean, that's fair. I need to watch. Yeah. It's tough phrasing. I'm going to shock everyone with number five at Collateral Beauty.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even see it.
So good.
Did you like Collateral Beauty?
I actually liked it. I think it was because I thought it was going to be so horrible.
Yeah.
That when I walked in and walked out, I was like, that was actually surprisingly good.
Mm. You saw this movie in the theaters?
Yeah, I watched it with my family.
Oh.
Yeah, I was in Utah.
I feel like this
and they
is a
wanted
Hallmark
to go.
Movie.
It totally is. It's totally a Hallmark movie. It's a tearjerker. It's got, like, a slight twist in it, and if you don't see it coming, it's just great.
All right.
Thank you, Marissa. Marissa said Collateral Beauty is great, and Marissa's been doing a show on this network long than we have, so she knows.
Not to be confused with Collateral Damage.
Collateral Damage. My number four is Hitch.
Yep.
My number three is is Men in Black.
Yep.
Because I still love Men in Black. Yep. I still like go back and watch it. And D'Onofrio is great.
D'Onofrio is great.
Enemy of the State is two, and Pursuit of Happiness is number one because
Pursuit's really good.
Yeah, it's such a good movie. Jaden does an incredible job.
Yeah.
And it's just heartbreaking. It's like truly, truly heartbreaking, and he does a very good job portraying this real, real person. Yeah, that movie still gets me.
Does that movie start out with Jaden looking at him and being like, "Dad, this is a very sensitive subject," or is that just the two of us?
I think that's the music video for just the two of us.
Which I do like also that love. The three of us in our top three have Enemy of the State and Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah, yeah. So, makes sense.
Look at that.
Yeah, they're
look
sweet.
It's interesting you didn't put Men in Black in, but I totally understand it, like 100%.
I put it in.
I'm just going to non-sequitur for
a quick. We all did then, didn't we?
We Men all did.
Oh, yeah, yeah, gotcha.
I'm just going to non-sequitur for a quick second before we get into favorite line, just because I had an experience coming home last night. I was on a flight back from New York, and I watched The Judge. Don't ask me why.
Melissa McCarthy? What is this
movie? The Downey and...
The Downey Duval.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Which, like, when that movie came out, there was no doubt that it was like, I am not going to watch this. This looks like the worst.
Yeah.
It looked like a tearjerker / comedy. Uh-huh. And then they started sending out screeners because Duval was really good, and they wanted to try to get him an Oscar nod, and he got one at 83 as the oldest actor ever to get an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor. And
you're going to need that knowledge.
No joke.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. On the airplane, was crying so much. I was having to do the thing where I was covering my head because I was like embarrassed. It wasn't just like slight tears.
I love it.
It was like every 15 minutes it would start happening again. And like, I don't know. I could have just been like,
are
I
you
was
talking
tired.
About The Judge?
Yes.
I love this. I gotta see this movie.
And
so
I don't
bad.
Know if it was like having like an emotional moment, but like, and I'm not even sure why I'm bringing it up right now. It's just like I thought of it just now and was realizing, like thinking back, I like this morning I was like, I'm gonna go look up reviews for this movie, and it's probably gonna
23
be
on Metacritic,
pretty underrated. People are gonna like it. It was like all critics, like 53%. I was like, oh geez, this is not a good one to have that experience with.
Aww.
Ben like spent his whole morning writing a letter to Rotten Tomatoes.
This should be higher.
That is amazing.
The movie's like pretty good, I have to say. It definitely had some ridiculous parts. The performances of those two guys are great. Duvall's awesome.
We're going to be doing it on the show next week.
Yeah, it's a good film.
How many explosions?
Emotion.
A lot of explosions of emotion.
All right, so let's move on. Favorite line. There's so many good ones in here. Who wants to hop in first?
You guys go ahead.
Okay, Brian, what
sure,
you got?
I'll go first. Mine's just, because you made a phone call!
Because you made a
That's
phone
it.
Call!
That's my husband and I say that to each other all the time.
So
like,
good.
Why did you do this? Or why did this happen? Yeah. Because you made, a,
you
phone
made
call.
A phone call!
We definitely like to quote this movie.
I love that Enemy of the State is like such like a hallmark in your life. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, me too.
It's like so important.
Like, I've never met anyone that's like, we quote Enemy of the State.
Oh,
like,
God.
Oh, that's cool. There's a few of them, but my favorite is... maybe the bag move, maybe the light alter the shadow, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's everything. Yeah, Jack Black's like, nah, nah, nah. And John Boyd is like so uber serious with his one line.
Yeah.
Maybe it's everything. And that's in one of the trailers, I remember too. And I just, it was like a total, I'm a kid again.
Yeah.
I watch it. So that's my favorite line.
My favorite is when they do the brief hero qualifier on Brill, and he's like, join the army, 53, intelligence, fast promotion, excel, join the NSA in 65, was in the service for 15 years, intelligence, disappeared in 80.
Yeah, they didn't even say anything cool about him.
He's like, that's a long time.
It's a long time, that must mean he's like, gotta be 65. It does.
Yeah. It's like, and then Voight's like, this guy's the problem,
we got the... Boyd's pretty good in this, right?
Yeah. Do you realize the movie that came out the
like
year
he's
before?
So
it's
got to
be Anaconda, right?
Yeah.
This was Voight's comeback. He did Anaconda in 97, and then he did this, and then he's and then it's like you've got it's Pearl Harbor. He's the president, right?
Yeah. I think they just wanted him to be the character from Anaconda in this, but he refused to do it again.
My favorite line in this movie has got to be John Voight's sweat stain in Anaconda.
That's the guy. We gotta chase him.
Anacondas are a perfect killing machine. I think that like that's one of the movies now, because we did it on the show like whatever a year ago.
Yeah.
I think Anaconda is one of those like weird Criterion movies they should go back and do, where like I think that that movie is going to go down in history, remembered as one of the most just like absurd movies ever made.
Put it into the National Registry.
Huge
guys.
'90s cast, like
Ice Cube.
Such an enormous
hip hop artist.
Yeah,
J-Lo.
And John Voight just like taking this massive risk with the character
for no reason,
just hanging his nuts out to dry with the most outrageous and ridiculous like Cuban or like who even knows what he's like. I don't even know what he's.
I'm
going to
do an accent. Like, oh, that's great from the area. Yeah, it's going to be from the area. They can show him. Okay, guys, here. What the fuck is this?
Anacondas are a perfect killing machine.
That's not in the script, John. You can't just keep saying that.
There's something down there. I really mean it.
I really mean it, though.
I really mean it, too. All right, so AMA questions. We didn't have... Wait, did we go through all of our favorite lines?
We did.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Right. AMA question... We kind of covered them, you know.
The main two were the underrated one, and then the second one about is this the best ensemble cast of the 90s? And I thought about that a lot because, but the thing is, it's not, because most of the guys we're talking about, they're notable.
They weren't.
Well, they're notable for us, for our age, because, sure, we, care about Jamie Kennedy, and we care about Seth Green, but that's because of our age. Like,
yeah,
it's not worldwide, these people matter. And even Anna Gunn, she's only relevant because she was Skyler in Breaking Bad. Not like she had a big career.
15 years later.
Yeah. All the biggest people in this
for
movie.
10 years. Yeah.
The real surprising ones that are that's a really big person to be in this movie is Gabriel Byrne. That's a huge person to have a very
Jason
small role.
Jason Lee, honestly, that was kind of a surprising. Because
Jack Black.
Jack Black. Seth Green.
Jason Robards, guys.
Oh, yeah,
Jason
Robards is in there, too. We love Robards on the show.
But I mean, Barry Pepper, Scott Conn. Most of these guys are just kind of
Seth Green is a really interesting one because it's
teeth.
His is more. Because Seth Green was really big in the 90s.
Yeah, huge.
And then now he's just he's just Chris. He's from Family Guy.
Yeah, he's also one of those guys that's he just is a name. He's more of a pop culture figure than he's an actor at this point.
Well, you have to think that time in the 90s for Seth Green, he was in Buffy.
Yeah,
that's true.
And
Austin Powers,
Austin Power movie.
Yeah.
He was really big.
Signing a cut!
It feels like this movie, any number of the cast should have just been in Can't Hardly Wait. That's what I think about this movie.
They definitely could just do a recast Can't Hardly Wait, and it's all these people.
Yeah.
So I don't think it is the strongest of the 90s.
What part is John Voight in Can't Hardly Wait?
He's the heartthrob.
Yeah.
Doing his accent.
Cage versus Cruz, since they were both supposed to be in this movie.
Oh, man.
I cross-dress on the weekends.
I think if they really made this movie and they made it a little more serious, the best of the three would have been Cage. This is prime time Cage, and if he had taken it pretty seriously, he really played this
as
role.
As what part though?
In the Will Smith part.
Okay.
If he had gone if he had been Stanley in The Rock, he had actually tried to play it as a real person in this movie, I think it could have totally worked. I think Cruz
would have been
everyman.
Too much. Yeah.
It would have been awesome. And it's primetime Cruz, but it's also Cruz and Smith both got better in the mid 2000s. 98's a fine year for both guys, but they are much, much more entertaining.
They're still finding themselves, it seems.
They just grew into being more men. In their 30s, they're a little bit more convincing. I don't know.
I could see Nick Cage playing Brill. If they made a younger Brill.
Sure. Yeah,
Or Thomas Reynolds, so the John Voight character. I could see him being either of those.
You guys know there's a TV series based on this that's greenlit, right?
No.
They're developing
what?
Now.
Is it called Enemy of the State?
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Bruckheimer's producing. None of the original cast is coming back. But yeah, it was greenlit last October.
I want John Voight to come back.
Amazing.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it, so it makes me feel like it probably got shelved. But it was greenlit and announced the deadline back last October.
So what do you think, man? Three categories, guys. We have three categories on the show. They're totally ridiculous. Those are movies that fall off the edge of absurdity. Those are movies Predator? No, Predator doesn't go in there anymore. Yeah, Demolition Man,
and Face Off, and Con Air.
Con Air does not fall in that.
Changed my mind.
Totally legit. Those are movies Lone Survivor, Gladiator, movies that are just really well held together. Good story, great acting. Could be Oscar movies.
They don't
Fugitive.
Make you laugh necessarily.
Yeah. And then there's the middle category, ridiculous, legitimate. A lot of our favorite movies fall in there. Predator is in there, Speed is in there, The Rock. This movie is interesting because. There's so much ridiculous about it, but like you said, it is incredibly ahead of its time.
Yeah, I think it's totally ridiculous.
Really?
I would call this. Yeah, it's
what
it's,
I'm saying. Totally legitimate.
I always do though.
I feel like that's my thing. I come in here and I'm like, this is real.
I think this movie's totally ridiculous.
Guys, hashtag three categories at AMA podcast. Tag Miss Movies in it. Tag me. Let me know what you guys think because I'm going to go right in the middle.
Okay.
So we are completely split.
Yeah.
Marissa, do you have an opinion on this? You know the categories very, very well.
Yeah. I think I told you, Andy, before you guys met,
live. I said ridiculously legitimate.
Yeah. Yeah, there is so much about this that makes my opinion correct. Thank you, Marissa. I get it. It's so ridiculous. There's so much about it. The shootout for me is kind of what brings it back in the world of real. It's just like, you're like, damn, this movie could have just gone like totally shootout. Ridiculous and just like fun ending. Yeah. And this was like really intense.
I feel like if this were a movie that was spanned over like almost a whole year, then it would be a little more totally legitimate. Oh, yeah, you know, because it's so condensed in like a few days that you're like, okay, well, that obviously can't happen, but I still am going to call it totally legitimate.
It's just for me,
despite that argument I just made against myself.
For me,
it's
still
it's just like got so much like
so much.
We have this position, and then in the background, it's like just basically the music from The Rock. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, like all dun, the SUVs pulling up, people jumping out. Yeah, I get it.
I actually think there's like some very similar music to The Rock. There's one passage that I remember listening to being like, if it goes up here, it's just from The Rock.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't. I was like, okay, so they just sampled it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's going to wrap us up for the day. Thanks for watching it the last few years. Thanks for watching in 2017 with us. Thanks for coming on the show, Miss Movies. Where can the folks find you if they want to follow along with your career?
Thank you for having me. You can follow along with my career, I guess, on Twitter at Miss Movies, Instagram Miss_Movies, and YouTube.com/MissMovies.
I'm so sad we're not doing the pitch, but I realize it's because we're done for the next two
can
weeks.
Can we at least just say the word?
Yeah. Ben, what do we have coming up?
We have one last thing called coming up, and it's called
The Pitch!
So you're a
she
fan.
She did it.
She watches the show.
Yeah, that's amazing.
She listens to the show.
Guys, you can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter. Please keep me company over the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Let me know what I should be watching, what movies. I think I'm just going to say this real quick, and I might just be overstepping my bounds, but I think we're going to cover The Last Jedi when we come back.
Oh, are we?
I think we should. I think we should, man. I think I've heard incredible things about it. We did A New Hope this year. It's the last like one in this trilogy. It seems like it'd just be so appropriate for us to do it.
Andrew and I talked a little bit this morning about this subject, and so The Last Jedi fits into the subject, but sort of, guys, if you've listened or you've watched for 120 episodes of the show, we've covered almost every single one of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, like the like cornerstone
action
movies.
We were dying to do.
They're almost all in the catalog now. Like when somebody finds the show on Facebook, and they're like, "Have you covered this?" It's like always a yes.
Yeah.
So at this point, we did it a little bit 6 months ago.
Unfortunately,
Andrew and I kind of moved in the direction of being a little bit more open with what we were going to cover. I think we're going to start covering more movies a little bit outside the genre, things that we said we were never going to do. Because, for instance, like, we really want to do Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises. We love those movies. Yeah. They're Nolan movies. We haven't gotten to do them on
the show.
They're
action films.
Yeah, we won't be exactly. We won't be going and doing something like Boogie Nights or Magnolia, even though we would love to cover those. But yeah, so I think The Last Jedi is a great way to start the year. I think everyone's going to probably see it with their family this Christmas or these holidays.
In 2018, you can redo the top four rules.
Yeah, maybe
maybe that's what you do. You have a summit.
Rules.
Action and Movie Anatomy Summit.
The Rule Summit.
The Rule Summit. Here, we're going to fix this so we can do all these other
There'll
films.
Be a lot of scotch there.
A lot of scotch. So that's going to do it, guys. Thanks again for watching all year. And we'll see you guys in 2018 with some new movies.
Bye.
Have a good one, everybody.
Yeah, take care.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.